On the retail media front, it's one of the most interesting areas that we look at right now, and this ability to monetize your digital and physical shelves and the relationship between CPG and retail, CPG as retail. It is a way for retailers to think differently about bottom line.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to The Safari. This is Morty Singer speaking. And today we are going to talk about all things consumer and retail and technology worldwide with Deborah Weinswig, who is the founder and CEO of Coresight Research. And she is an incredible talent, and she's been really focused all over the world on what's happening next in our industry. And, you know, today she is independent, has her own business, but she before this was working for Fung Global Retail and Technology, which was obviously a part of the Lian Feng family and of businesses, and spent a huge amount of time in Asia. And she was also before that in Citibank's research department. And so she looks at the world through the different prisms of how things are over there and how things are here. And as you'll hear, I just love speaking to her about, you know, why the things that are there are not here. And she gives us some examples of when and why and if and whether some of the cool technologies that are driving commerce elsewhere will arrive in the United States and Europe. But she is a wealth of information. We cover so many different things on this podcast, including live stream shopping and metaverse and instant commerce and blockchain, NFT, retail media, everything in 25 minutes. So stick around. Deborah, thank you so much for joining me on The Safari. How are you?
I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Where are you?
I am actually in New York getting ready for the big holiday weekend. What about yourself?
Same. I don't know. Are there any people left in New York, I think? So, except the president's here. The president's here. So that's all good.
Probably there's the three of us. It's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Good company.
So listen, we got so much to cover. We'll punch through it because you have so much experience in so many areas. And I just want to make sure that we get to all of it. So I've already done the introduction, of course, but, you know, just to reemphasize certain pieces of it and why I'm so interested to speak to you is that you have spent your life, and I've known you for quite some time now, and I've sort of seen it firsthand. You've lived in two ecosystems. You've lived in the United States ecosystem, but let's call it the Western digital and retailing ecosystem. And you've also lived very squarely in the Asian one. And whether that's Chinese or Asian, whatever you want to call it, let's call it the Eastern one versus the Western one. And you've seen where the two converge and where they completely separate. And I'm fascinated by the fact that you're able to almost, I don't know, see the future for us here because, you know, many people have not been to China, don't know how crazy it is that they are so frictionless compared to who we are here and how we do things here. America loves to think of itself as, you know, the shining light of technology and advancement and, you know, how all things are wonderful. And that is true in many areas. But I would say in retail tech, we're not compared to many parts of Asia, not just China. And it's quite rare to have an individual who has that sort of understanding. It's sort of like this, I always use this expression here. You know, the future is here. It's just unevenly distributed. You're able to distribute it to us today, maybe a little bit. So maybe for those listening who don't know you, if they've been living under a rock, give them 1 minute on what Coresight does, and then we can launch into some questions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're really rooted in research. It's my background. It's my passion. I'm a constant learner. And from that research, we do a lot of advisory on, I think, some of the topics we're going to discuss today. And so we really start at a different place, and we start from more of a quantitative, and then we'll add on the qualitative. Because of those two, we've developed a lot of our own proprietary data to be able to move faster. And then we work with a lot of, you know, let's just say a lot of technology companies to help them also, you know, you can call it go-to-market strategy, marketing, help them kind of tell the world what it is that they do and kind of why they do it. So I think that was 60 seconds or less.
Good for you. Good for you. I say 60 seconds and people go on for 5 minutes. So let's go right into number one. I have heard you speak about live stream shopping for, I don't know, a decade. In China, as you would remind me then, it was a many centi-billion dollar industry. It's today probably, you know, tripled or quintupled since then. And that means obviously home shopping channels, but also streaming from digital devices, which can then convert into shopping on the various platforms in Asia. Could you speak about what it's like in Asia, how live stream shopping exists, how it fits into the ecosystem, and then end with why is it that America just hasn't got it yet? And it's coming. It feels slow. We still have QVC, HSN, and whoever the other guys are. And then people mucking about with Facebook and TikTok maybe. But anyway, I'll stop. Over to you.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I appreciated that they asked so many questions. You know, CNBC did a whole almost like documentary on live streaming, and it was over the course of a few months. And you know, really, when you start to kind of dig into the differences and the opportunities here in the U.S., you know, they are massive. In China, we're assessing it at a $512 billion market this year, which is obviously quite large.
Live streaming in China.
Live streaming in China only, yeah. $512 billion of commerce. And so, you know, when we started there, you know, which was honestly about a decade ago, it was, right, there were whole cities of people that were training people to be kind of KOLs, influencers, live streamers. So you had people who were, like, that was kind of the talent that they developed. It was just about live streaming. It was just about selling kind of goods or services, you know, through a mobile device and, you know, kind of driving excitement, but also education. And, right, the Chinese consumer, it takes 12 touch points for them to convert, you know, live streaming being one of them. But then they would also kind of develop a relationship oftentimes with the influencer and develop relationships with other people on the stream. And so what we found would always, you know, basically resonate with me is that we saw like literally low single digit return rates on items bought through live streams. That was actually part of the passion I had in terms of why I felt this was such a kind of from a modality was really critical. And it's also, if we start to think about the differences between the East and the West on this, you know, there it's just, you know, you have live streaming and e-commerce. It's not that, yes, you do think about them differently. And one of the differences as well is that, you know, some of these KOLs who've become very well established, they actually now buy directly from brands. So they themselves are a brand and they are selling other people's brands in their streams. But you as a consumer, you trust them more than you might trust the brand or other platforms. That's what's fascinating. So that's kind of a very quick snapshot of how it works in China.
So for those who are sort of trying to keep up with that, an influencer in China can monetize their reach by getting, let's call them affiliate fees or better, from brands, either directly to the brands or to retailers. And they somehow, who aggregates the revenue? Who aggregates that GMV on their behalf? How is that shopping experience delivered to the end consumer?
So you literally hit on the number one kind of critical aspect. It's all through the platforms that they're streaming on, which most of it is still on Taobao Live. And the fact that there is kind of one platform makes it really easy and everything goes through there. And so I want to further delve into that. We've had a lot of Western brands, just as you look at the size of the consumer market in China, who've wanted to kind of experiment before they jump in with both feet. And we've run live streams out of the US, right? On Taobao Live, and then we'll use a specific, you know, kind of, if you will, vendor to ship. We can do it for like $7 or $8 a package. I can get it there in 5 to 7 days, and we use Chinese nationals, right, because they have access to these platforms. And it's been unbelievable for basically little to no investment how you can start, and you can also start to see and figure stuff out right before you actually go to China. So is this going to work? What's this going to look like? Then we can also, right, seed product in China with some of these folks. just as a quick, just quick wins. I mean, I think that that's to me, and I mean, you know, Morty, you're also kind of a global citizen, is this idea around quick wins and understanding things and not having to spend 12 to 18 months figuring this out. And that's what China's all about. And it's, mm-hmm. it's experimentation. And, you know, and, I mean, you know, you think about it now, we have many, I mean, it started off at Double 11. Now you have 618, right? You're like mid-year festival. And then like International Women's Day, 3-8, right? You've got three times a year, you can kind of test your mettle, if you will. And that I think also is, you know, this kind of constant learning is what I think encourages, and it's okay to fail, right? That's the thing, is it's fine to fail because you also haven't spent a lot of money doing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how do you think that's going to translate here? I mean, there are a bunch of people trying. I'm fascinated by someone being able to deliver a streaming platform that can then be pushed onto multiple platforms, as it were. I mean, so I was talking to the guys from The Mile the other day who've got a whole bunch of influencers who are able to push out that video into various feeds such that they can then convert from those feeds. And I'm wondering, I think it's one of the next great frontiers in the United States in shopping. Do you agree? And what should all these people be focusing on to make it scale?
So I have been incredibly impressed by what Poshmark has done. And in a very short period of time, right, through the acquisition, they started almost immediately allowing people to beta test their like Posh shows. And so what you see is, you know, now, and you, this is all kind of, you know, consumer to consumer, right? C2C platform. But you'll see literally kind of if you go on at any point in the day, I mean, Coach has 1 million followers on Poshmark, right? They have their own store. And so you start to think about, I mean, that happened really quickly, right? Because it just started after the acquisition. And that is actually much more similar in some ways to what we've seen in China with like Taobao Live. It, obviously, it's different, but similar. And, you know, and here you also have like a whole sustainability aspect to it as well. I, you know, TikTok, you know, as they continue to grow and scale, you know, I would have thought an Amazon or Walmart, right? You really need a platform that, because you need constant content. That's, I think, where the West thinks differently from the East. It's like, okay, I'm going to put in my calendar that there is a 2 o'clock live stream. No, you're not. You're not going to do that unless they're giving stuff away for free, which we also, that's actually the other thing. There's not this like gamification element. Like, and I get from a regulatory legal perspective, I believe me, we've been on the side of that working with a lot of US retailers, why that's a challenge, you know, from a sweepstakes perspective or kind of a giveaway. And, you know, some of the stuff we've also done in China is like where you'll be on one platform. And let's say if you end up, you know, kind of, you know, being the person who's quote unquote going to win, you may win something on a different platform. And so it's much more this kind of cross-platform, cross-brand, cross-pollinization that we see in China. And here, like, we're still trying to figure out what platform we should be on. Like, we're still, like, I will say it, I thought we would be farther along. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
In 23. I felt this was going to be the pivotal year, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. And I think one of the issues that I don't understand how the Chinese have been able to solve this, but in America, there's some sort of truism that is, you know, if you go to the big platforms, whether it be, you know, YouTube or otherwise, they all will tell you, and TikTok, they'll say, you know, it's hard to optimize for both watch time and conversion. You have to choose one. You have to pick a lane. But it's actually worked in China. They have done both, as proven by the $512 billion industry, which has doubled since we first started talking about it. The other thing that hasn't come here is the QR code properly. I mean, you'd think you should be able to buy something from a shop window like you do in the street. Or, you know, there are guys in the street who you can buy an apple from a guy in the street with a QR code in Hong Kong. Why is that not sort of being adopted here more quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to the QR code. I mean, you know, pre-pandemic, there people wouldn't even know what you're talking about really when you talked about a QR code, at least now. And some of, you know, it'll be interesting, right, going to these smart labels and whatnot on the food side, right, that's all being kind of mandated federally. We are going to see label changes by 2025, and you know, QR codes will be more integral. But you know, I actually tried to do something in the city of New York. I don't even know what I'm like. If I think about it, I have no idea why. But I just see all these vendors on the street, and you know, I don't usually, you know about you, Morty, I don't carry a lot of cash around with me. and they have no way to accept payment. And so I was like, well, what if we spun up a whole QR code? So I literally tried to do this in the city, and it was challenging. I will leave it at that. I actually found a company who does QR codes. I found the right person in the mayor's office to talk to. And I was like, you know, you're driving commerce, and you're also then collecting revenues on that commerce, right? That's the thing is the guys who are selling apples on the street aren't paying taxes for the most part, I assume, but maybe they are. And I was like, you know, if you can think about this as a way to generate revenues for the city, right? It like made sense along every single checkbox we've just talked about, but it's been challenging. And I feel that maybe everyone's like, you know, we're doing things in a certain way and we're comfortable with that. And we don't want to move. So the other question you asked was about kind of duration versus conversion, et cetera. So I think that the shows here are not particularly entertaining, right? Because it ends up being all about the influencer KOL. It's like a me, me, me.
Yeah.
As opposed to it's about the brand and your audience. And that I find is... That is the answer. So in right, if you're in a Chinese live stream, right, they're talking about, oh, Morty, it's so great to see you again. I'm so happy. How's your dog and how are your kids and how's your apartment and like what's new? And like, and so it shows. So like in some ways, you like, right, you fluff up. You're like, oh, they remember me. I feel good about myself. And that is why you come back, and that's why you stay on that show. Because they are talking to you directly, right? It's all one to many, but there the conversation is very much one to one. Here, right, what you see, because we get all, right, we're in the background of a lot of these shows we're running, is that the people are, it's actually fascinating, is that the people in the show are talking to each other and exchanging Instagram handles because they've now found people who are passionate about a brand. The person who's quote unquote on stage selling it, they're like, eh, yeah, they're fine. But I really want to like get to know, like, I want to build like my own community. So maybe it's that people haven't like focused on the community build and whatnot. And then I feel like YouTube is more about a platform for the creators. It's not, you know, it's not that they don't have the opportunity to get to where I think that they should. I don't know if that's how they're thinking about it.
No, I'd agree with that. So let's keep on chopping through this wood here. Metaverse, in 2 minutes, let's talk about Metaverse versus augmented reality. It's all kind of the same thing, I guess, in some ways. So I'm two thumbs down on Metaverse. I'm thumbs up on augmented reality. I think Luxottica one day will end up owning the whole market because they'll end up putting the technology into glasses that you actually want to wear. But that's probably 10 years out. But I think their stock price would indicate that other people think that that could be a possibility. But anyway, what do you think about how this application is going to work in retail, if at all?
Yep. So what I'm starting to see is finally, so it was interesting is we had done a piece, we delivered it at Shop Talk in the US on Web3 supply chain. Let's just say I did not have a full room. I then delivered the exact same piece of content at Shop Talk Europe to a could not, like there was standing room only and there were people outside watching the presentation on a monitor. And what we've seen right in Europe now, which all of these changes around kind of, you know, let's just say fast fashion legislation, the proposed legislation, the, you know, as you're kind of disposing of garments, but this idea that you can like track and trace. So, you know, and we've seen a huge amount of acquisition activity as well. And, you know, this ability to kind of track and trace from kind of raw material to consumer is something that's really critical right now. And then secondly, as we're looking at sustainability recycling, right, you have to really know what's in that garment. And, you know, in some cases, is it organic cotton? Is it non-organic? You know, and has this kind of, right, cotton poly recycles about once with like a special application and that's kind of it. And so has this already been recycled? Has it not? And, you know, really starting to build relationships between the consumer and the person who produced their garment and the brand. That's, I think, the application of blockchain technology, as I would put it, under Metaverse. And, you know, it goes back to, you know, we will see, I think, payments, you know, kind of eventually, you know, I know the C word, the crypto word is not a word that, you know, maybe we want to talk about, but I think that we'll start to see kind of payments happen in a way that enable, right? So you can start to pay vendors.
Hang on.
So enable this.
Let me, I got it now. I'm now tracking, but let me try and summarize that, because when I was saying metaverse, I was thinking front of house, meaning transactions. You were thinking metaverse through the blockchain or delivering the answer through a blockchain lens, which is still metaverse because it's
blockchain. Yeah.
It's blockchain and it's out. But metaverse,
as you're saying it, right? This idea of like gaming and gamification. I mean, you literally had half of Americans in 22 gaming on average 24 hours a week, up from 18 hours pre-pandemic. So you have more people on these platforms. You have more people who want to engage, right? Because they're trying to build community, going back to our earlier conversation. Now, how that's ultimately delivered, and do we want to walk around with headsets on? I mean, hey, I have a pair of Google Glass.
But your Deborah Weinswig view of metaverse is much broader, therefore. So when I'm thinking of metaverse, I'm thinking of wearing a helmet, and you're saying, no, it can be a computer game. It can be how you're delivering the payment and blockchain. It's like the whole...
It's broad, and that's why I think I will say there's something, and it could be all this proposed legislation, which I think was May 23rd. We heard kind of more definitively from Europe. That would actually work timing-wise. I have seen a huge increase in interest around Web3 supply chain, which actually dovetails with almost exactly that date. Because if you are a global retailer, this is coming for you. And having talked to them, this is something that is consuming a lot of their time, because if you don't change, you're going to be hit with a huge amount of fines/taxes.
Okay, so keeping on punching through, what do you mean by instant commerce? How do you define instant commerce? Because I think it's good that we have definitions, because we obviously think of things, or you know, we have different answers for, or different points of view as to what is what, right? So instant commerce, over to you.
I would start by defining it as kind of like the GoPuff and Getirs of the world. That's kind of where I start. You know, you can throw in like Uber Eats and DoorDash and all of that as well. But I look at it more, and why like GoPuff is so special or unique, they own BevMo, right? So they are actually in the business of retail. So they think about this completely differently. And why does that matter? Because all the CPGs we're working with, and mind you, we pre-pandemic did not, right? We were more retail tech focused. We have started to do a huge amount of work in CPG, right? And what's fascinating is these CPGs love quick commerce because they can literally run a special for an hour and they get the data immediately. And then they can start to change things. And so I believe that quick commerce, and that's why that definition is important, is you can test really quickly and really inexpensively. And that is where I think we're seeing at least the CPG and you know, retail as well, be very interested in the data that's coming out of this. And, you know, making a few bob along the way is good as well. But I think it's this idea. And what, you know, I think sustainability, you know, people are like, you know, it's not a word to weave into everything these days. But when you are buying things that you need that day, you are buying less, you are wasting less. And so I think that there is also a huge component, right? If you are literally buying like we do, no, like people do like in Europe, right? If you're buying to eat that day, you don't have a huge kind of refrigerator full of, you know, of anything that's going to go to waste. And so I think that there is more to be said about it. I think that there's been consolidation. I think there are challenges in, you know, especially in New York, where you can't have dark stores and you have to be able to shop from the box. I mean, that adds a whole nother level of complexity, but we don't need to go there.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry, and it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the safari. So retail media, retailers are increasingly recognizing that they have data and that they have the ability to target customers in a certain way and mine that for profit. And then in the same breath, I would say sort of retail as a media platform, sort of reversing it rather, to say, you know, retail is a billboard. If you have the right retail in the right location, you know, you have the media value of that real estate. So media, therefore, in that example, is two completely different things. But I find it very promising for the retailing industry for both of those reasons. Do you want to elaborate some more?
Yeah. So retail as a media, I'm going to put back into metaverse. And what we're seeing is that you are actually starting to see retailers sell the exterior of their buildings. And then you can use, right, an AR lens to kind of like see the specials, to learn about product. Morty, I will tell you, I have only had one other person ever ask me that question. You are very, very forward thinking on that. And I think your clients benefit. That's a very forward thinking. And you start to think about the real estate industry and some of the challenges that exist, but maybe they don't exist in as much kind of concern as, you know, the media has. On the retail media front, it's one of the most interesting areas that we look at right now, and this ability to monetize your digital and physical shelves and the relationship between CPG and retail, CPG as retail. It is a way for retailers to think differently about bottom line. And in a time period where organized retail crime is really crimping them, this way is something that I think gives them hope in a short period of time where there is a lot that gives them less hope, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, last one is about zero party data and the ability for competitive brands and retailers to band together. I spoke about this with Adrian from Miracle the other day on this podcast, about this band of brethren who are not Amazon. Amazon knows everything about everyone, so they're able to optimize that experience, but everyone else has their own websites, right? So how do we share or incentivize the consumer to share their data such that the pool can then learn from the needs of that individual consumer and pivot whatever that website might look like when they show up? Blockchain's tried to do it, and I haven't really seen it work. Is anyone doing that right to sort of create the Rebel Alliance, as it were?
You pay them. So now you can go, right? You can download your Google data, you can download your Amazon data, and there are actually different services where you can sell that to like Walmart. And that to me, right, that is how I'd say like Gen Z kind of thinks, is like, it's my data. Yes. And you have to incent me in order to give that to you. So that could be being paid for it. It could also be that you kind of get access or early access to things as well. But once again, Morty, we're in very early days in that. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of experimentation. But I think in terms of topics, that is like a 2024 topic that if you are early, I think this is one of those I think is important to be early.
Good for you. So I promise we'd do this in 25 minutes. It's 25 and 16 seconds. So, you know, we got through a lot in that time. It's always such an incredible pleasure to speak with you. Deborah Weinswig, the CEO and founder of CoreSite Research. Thank you so much for joining me on the safari.
Thanks, Morty. Take care. Talk to you soon.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.